How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on the legendary Wrestling Observer Live. We're here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined, as always, by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare up at WrestlingObserver.com. And in the next 2 hours, we have so much pro wrestling and mixed martial arts news to talk about that it's not even funny. If you are a wrestling fan that has grown up watching WWF, WWE, maybe you watch some WCW, maybe you watch some TNA, but largely you're just a U.S. wrestling fan, you may be unaware that last night, arguably the greatest professional wrestler who ever lived had his retirement match. We're going to talk to you about that, what happened, the match itself, the reaction to the match. It was an amazing story that's coming up in the first hour. In fact, that's coming up right after the opening break. We're going to talk about the retirement of Kenta Kobashi. And then we've got so much news to get into. The Monday Night Raw, TNA Impact, SmackDown reports, WWE main event. We've got a preview of Extreme Rules. We have even more matches for the Extreme Rules pay-per-view to get into. We'll talk about an injury to James Storm that occurred on the live edition of Impact that you may or may not have noticed, but maybe a serious injury, and we'll talk about what happened, how it happened, and Woody's going in to get this thing checked out. That's coming up as well, plus the Impact ratings. Big debate on the website a couple of days ago whether or not Impact ratings were affected by daylight savings time, and a lot of people thought, well, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of, but there is evidence that, in fact, the Impact ratings have been down because of daylight savings time. And as a result, whatever the reason is, TNA is now moving from 8 o'clock p.m. to a 9 o'clock p.m. start time at the end of the month. How is that going to affect TNA? How is that going to affect Bellator? How is that going to affect all of these different shows? We're going to talk about that on the program. Plus, Jay Briscoe got himself in trouble. He apologized last night. We'll tell you what happened and what he said in his apology. And man, I'm halfway through my list of stuff to preview, but we got to head to a break. Back in just a moment, kicking off a very newsworthy show, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, sometimes Channel 92 or 94 or 794, or XM Radio Channel 208. We stream live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And you can check us out on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. That's the TuneIn Radio app. You can search Sports Byline USA or Wrestling Observer. You can find this show every Sunday live at 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. Or replays and archives of the show are available as well. There's no excuse to not listen to this show. You can listen to it everywhere, anywhere in the world at any time. At least that's what I've determined. Mike Sempervivi is here on the line from WrestlingObserver.com. We have a lot of news to get into, but since Mike is our Japanese correspondent, he is going to tell us everything he ever wanted to know about the retirement of perhaps the greatest professional wrestler of all time.
Yeah, and I probably won't be able to do it the kind of justice that I'm sure Dave Meltzer is going to do tonight when he does the show with you up on the website, but yeah, I mean, you're not really, for a generation of wrestling fans and of people, hardcore wrestling fans especially, obviously, Kenta Kobashi is arguably the greatest wrestler of all time. He wrestled for a company, All Japan Pro Wrestling, which for, you know, fans who were longtime American wrestling fans, was always linked up with the National Wrestling Alliance, where you got Giant Baba and Jumbo Tsuruta, where they would come over, and I know they were featured a lot in the AWA and in Georgia on national television. And Kenta Kobashi was a guy that came along in a generation right after those guys, Mitsuharu Misawa and Toshiaki Kawada, two other legendary Japanese professional wrestlers. And he were this next generation that was coming on for All Japan after the era of Baba and the Funks and the guys in the 70s. And he moved them into the 80s and into the 90s. And legendary matches that he had. He arguably, I believe Dave Meltzer counted it up, he's had the most five-star matches out of any man in the history of pro wrestling. Kenta Kobashi has, both in singles matches against guys like Mitsuharu Misawa and Jun Akiyama and guys from that generation, as well as tag team matches that he had with, and this is going to sound funny to fans of today's wrestling, but the tag team of Johnny Ace, believe it or not, and Kenta Kobashi was quite a legendary team in Japan, and they had, you know, again, five-star matches, more than a handful of them against different opponents, and just a, you know, he's been breaking down in recent years and has gotten older, but he did get give American fans a real thrill, longtime Japanese observers who lived in America when he came and wrestled Samoa Joe a few years ago in Ring of Honor in New York, which was a major happening, and had a really great match. And Joe had went over there too in this talent exchange that Ring of Honor had with Pro Wrestling Noah, which was a group that Kobashi was a part of that basically was an extension of All Japan Pro Wrestling. So, again, I probably am not doing this the justice that it truly deserves, but again, because of the amount of five-star matches he had, because of the style he worked and the opponents he worked with, the guys like Misawas and the great workers of their generation, it is very arguable that Kenta Kobashi actually can be, you know, you can make a case that he is the greatest wrestler of all time, and if not the greatest, at almost, you know, without argument, in the top 10.
I'd say the top five. His final match, Kobashi, Akiyama, Keiji Muto, Kensuke Sasaki, beat Kenna Go Shiozaki, Yoshinobu Kanemaru, and Maibach Taniguchi. I guess the latter of which would be the youngest and newest protege of Kobashi. And Kobashi got the pin at the end of what I believe was a 40-minute match with his moonsault. And his moonsault was it was his finisher. It was a move that absolutely ravaged his knees. And he kept doing it over and over again. And I remember there was a period in the early 2000s where I think he got like a surgery after every single match. He was like Hulk Hogan over the last couple of years, where every time Hulk Hogan got in the ring, as soon as he got out of the ring, he'd have a surgery. And it was the same thing with Kobashi. So for all I know, he's going to have another surgery next week. But he did hit that one final big moonsault. And I saw a photo of the celebration. It's probably the before the match actually began, but everybody threw streamers into the ring, and I have seen a lot of wrestling matches all over the world where fans have thrown streamers into the ring. I have never seen so many streamers in a ring ever in my entire life. There were so many streamers that, like, you couldn't see anything in the ring. You could see, like, I could see one body outlined amongst all of these streamers. And obviously the show sold out, standing room only. Nobody could get into the building. There were closed circuit showings around Tokyo. Those were all sold out ahead of time. So basically, if you were late to the party, you didn't get into the party. And just a giant show of support for Kobashi. There were Misawa chants at the end of the match. They brought his family into the ring. This is the way to go out, let me tell you.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's a cultural, you know, it was a big deal culturally. As you know, again, the last generation of where pro wrestling truly was strongest before Pride and K-1 and mixed martial arts and that style of promotion and ring sport, you know, basically decimated pro wrestling, and wrestling kind of let itself be decimated by it. Especially New Japan, and in that time when Noah broke away from All Japan, they did a great job, you know, kind of, you know, carrying the torch and the banner of professional wrestling. And yeah, this, you know, there was a former prime minister who went Yoshihiko Noda to give his respect to Kobashi, as well as, you know, a bunch of video tributes from guys like Johnny Ace and Stan Hansen that were done as well. So, you know, this was a big deal, and it was a big deal for a lot of fans and a lot of observers of that scene, both here and in Japan, because it, in a way, it truly kind of is the, even though he's been banged up and hurt and basically semi-active for quite a long time for quite a number of reasons and injuries that he's had. You know, this is truly kind of closing the door on a, you know, on a generation of when wrestling truly was the strongest thing in Japan.
And the Johnny Ace who we're talking about is, in fact, Mr. John Laurinaitis of WWE Raw GM fame, if you can believe that. One half of a very legendary tag team in Japan. And whatever happened to old Johnny Ace? I'm glad he got to send in a video.
It's amazing. He was able to team with guys like Stan Hansen and Steve Williams and Kenta Kobashi. John Laurinaitis, folks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. An amazing tale. So hopefully some video of this will show up online here sometime soon. Everybody can head over and check it out. I haven't seen any video yet. I did see the photo. That's about all I've seen so far. But sounded like a... I mean, obviously it was a once-in-a-lifetime experience, the retirement of Kenta Kobashi. But that is the end of an era right there. And I don't know. You'd know better than I, future of All Japan and Noah. I mean, I don't know if tenuous is the right word, but certainly, you know, not in the best of shape, those two promotions.
Noah's basically hanging on by threads, and it's probably just going to be one of those promotions, you know, as it looks down the line where it's just kind of an indie promotion where a lot of big names, guys like Kensuke Sasaki and even guys like Keiji Muto can come in and out of there. I think that's probably going to be their future. On the other hand, All Japan's got new ownership. The guy who's the owner of that company is kind of a generational rival, I guess, business-wise, and life-wise with the new president of New Japan, who's been able to do, along with their booking, some incredible turnarounds for that company. So, you know, as long as All Japan's got an influx of money and it's got Keiji Muto around and some other, you know, guys around who can develop talent, which they've done a pretty decent job with under the unfortunate circumstances they've had to work under, there may actually be a small bit of a future there, but nothing like back in the 90s when all these guys ruled the roost. That, unfortunately, that's going to be one thing you'll never be able to get back in the bottle.
We'll talk more about this subject tonight on Wrestling Observer Radio with Dave Meltzer, which is available exclusively at WrestlingObserver.com. We are going to be back in just a moment talking all of the news from the past week in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, including Raw from Monday night with Brock Lesnar destroying Triple H's office. All that and more in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can also check us out on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. That is the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. Search Sports Byline USA or Wrestling Observer, and you can check us out. All the great Sports Byline programming. Actually, there's so much good stuff on. I'm not getting paid nothing to plug the TuneIn Radio app. I should be sponsored by these people. I plug them every single week, and I use the TuneIn Radio app all the time. So if anybody from that place is listening, get a hold of me and send some checks my way. Otherwise, I'm going to stop plugging you. Maybe not. Check out the TuneIn.
Send me some money, too. I actually downloaded the Pro app, which I'm a big fan of, and I'm not only a happy buyer of the TuneIn Radio app, I'm also a proud subscriber to Sirius as well. So both of you, send me something as well.
What do you get with the paid TuneIn Radio app, the paid version? What do you get?
The ability to record, the ability, again, I guess through, there's the archives are already there, and that's what I use it for, because sometimes I get lonely and want to hear my own voice and like to go to sleep to Wrestling Observer Live. So that's really what I use it for mostly.
That's literally the saddest thing I've ever heard. Think about that. All this time I've spent in wrestling, that's the saddest thing I've ever heard. You're so lonely, you got to hear your own voice on this show.
Well, it soothes me to sleep.
I hope your wife's not listening when you listen to this in bed at night and she hears that. There won't be another Avery.
Well, that's true. That's true. Which, by the way, want to wish all the mothers out there happy Mother's Day.
That's right. It's Mother's Day today. I totally forgot about that. I'm breaking kayfabe here. We recorded this on Saturday night, everybody. The show isn't live today. For me, Mother's Day is tomorrow. I've got everybody coming over. By the time you hear this show, I'll already have celebrated Mother's Day with my mother. Even though, as you're listening to this, I've forgotten that it's Mother's Day. Have I just ruined this?
Last call for Mother's Day, by the way, now, folks. Last call. We're giving you your warning here as we're wrapping up in the evening on the East Coast. Remember to call Mom.
That's right. You've been warned. You have a few hours left of Mother's Day here. You have 6 hours left on the East Coast. 7 hours. So call your mother and bake her a cake or something.
You don't have a mom, call somebody else's mom and wish them a happy Mother's Day.
That's right. That's right. Happy Mother's Day, all of you mothers. And happy Mother's Day to all of the wives and girlfriends out there, whether you're mothers or not. Because every time I go to a get-together and I meet listeners of this program, I always feel really bad for the wives and the girlfriends who have to listen to my voice all the time, and they're sick of it, and they have to meet the guy who every single night they have to hear, "How's it going, everybody?" And I know it drives them nuts, and I apologize. I apologize.
This is true. My wife actually mocks the "How's it going, everybody?" But she does at least listen to After Dark.
Oh, that's good. Even last night's show, because that was a disaster.
Hasn't heard that one yet. Good. Something to look forward to.
Oh, she's got something to look forward to with that one. All right. Raw on Monday night. Let's get back into the swing of things here. Raw was Monday night, and the highlight was, I guess, Brock Lesnar destroying Triple H's office, which makes us, I guess, interested in Triple H versus Brock Lesnar in a cage. Is that the idea here?
I think that's what it's supposed to be. It's either that or to always set up a 2001 type of screenshot of Paul Heyman in that face, you know, leering upon everyone at ringside.
I was amused by the angle, but at the end of the day, it was like, am I any more interested in this cage match than I was before this fun angle? And the answer was not really.
It's really just kind of going through the motions to get to something, to a match that nobody was really clamoring for after WrestleMania. I think it was, you know, obviously a lot of people wanted Brock Lesnar to win, and they were deflated out of that. And regardless, I mean, I think the only way that, you know, him destroying an office, to me, it's, you know, Brock should have won at WrestleMania and go rampaging on WWE now until, you know, Hunter comes back next year, but they decided not to do that. So they're going to have another match, which I'll assume Brock Lesnar is going to win this one. I mean, otherwise, why are they having it? But it's, you know, I just have kind of a whole malaise over WWE right now, and I'm not overly excited about anything coming up leading into this pay-per-view. And it just, I don't know. It just seems to be they're just throwing some stuff at the wall to get to the actual match. And I guess it made for good TV, you know, for a lot of people with him destroying things. Because Brock Lesnar destroying things, there are worse things you can watch. It just didn't do much for me as far as, you know, selling the pay-per-view. It just didn't work for me this week.
All right. My big question is this. It's John Cena and Ryback. This is their first ever singles match for the championship. And it's a last man standing match. Two-part question. Three-part question. Who wins? That's number one. Number two, how does this person win? And number three, why are we going from a last man standing match to presumably a normal singles match at the next pay-per-view? Isn't this backwards booking?
That's 2013 professional wrestling most of the time. I mean, we've seen with TNA, you know, how many times over the years, and WWE's done the same exact thing themselves, too. They book themselves into corners as far as having gimmick matches and gimmick pay-per-views, and the other, you know, thing that they do as well is, you know, have the gimmick match to lead to the regular match. They do this with tag teams all the time, too, where they have tag matches that end up leading to, you know, consecutive singles matches with guys, and it just, logically to me, it doesn't make, you know, a whole lot of sense, but I could see them actually taking the belt off of Cena. You know, you could do some sort of Shield beatdown or something like that. But I think probably what they will end up doing is, I don't know about what you would, how you would describe it, the Wile E. Coyote, you know, Roadrunner type of, you know, drop the safe sort of thing, where it's almost cartoonish, where John Cena, you know, has got the pallets of beer on the forklift and lowers that down on top of Ryback, and that somehow is how he gets the victory, because I don't see them taking the belt off of John Cena. But you get into this with Ryback all the time with having gimmick matches with him, where it's like you can't have him lose. And even though they keep having him lose, you know, they try to figure out ways to keep him strong, and I would assume they would do something like that in this case, where it's just some sort of, you know, bizarre, unworldly force that keeps Ryback down and keeps John Cena the champion.
So, the we got some stipulations now after SmackDown. Ziggler, Alberto Del Rio, and Jack Swagger. Actually, that may not even be the match. We'll talk about that in a moment. That is a ladder match for the World Heavyweight title. Last Man Standing is the Cena-Ryback match. Lesnar and Triple H's cage match. Sheamus and Mark Henry is a strap match. Strap match, everybody. Country whipping. And then Randy Orton and the Big Show is an Extreme Rules match. My question is this. What's the difference between a triple threat ladder match and an Extreme Rules match and a Last Man Standing match, aside from the how you determine a winner in Last Man Standing? Aren't they all just hardcore matches?
Pretty much. Pretty much. But that's what you get when you have a themed pay-per-view. You run into situations like this, where you have to have a bunch of matches and you have to throw a bunch of stipulations on just to justify it. And you end up with this. I mean, you know, country whipping match with Mark Henry and Sheamus. I saw a lot of Michael Hayes, Ted DiBiase country whipping matches in Mid-South UWF when I was a little kid, and they weren't good. It was fun to see, you know, Michael Hayes get whipped and beat up by Ted DiBiase, who was the good guy then, in that. But I don't know if I really want to watch the good guy Sheamus whip Mark Henry. I just don't really think I want to see that, and I don't think we will see that. At least I hope we don't see that.
Mark Henry's getting whipped, dude.
You really want to see Mark Henry get whipped?
No, he's a very sympathetic babyface in my eyes, but he's getting whipped.
Yeah, even more so after SmackDown, considering the man pulled two tractor trailers. You know, that's the other thing. Here's the other one of the other worst builds that they've had is Mark Henry and Sheamus, where Sheamus keeps, talk about Wile E. Coyote in the Roadrunner. You know, he keeps outsmarting Mark Henry and keeps, and I understand, you know, that there's a reason behind it that I can comprehend, where you want him, he obviously knows he can't out-physical him, and it was Mark Henry that beat him up in the first place, so why not outsmart him? But I think the way it comes across on the TV is
bullying.
He's being kind of a prick about the whole deal, especially when you have Mark Henry doing these. Again, why did he pull the tractor trailers on SmackDown then and make this heroic way, you know, this heroic thing? Why would you bother to do that then?
I don't know. I haven't understood a single angle with Mark Henry and Sheamus in a traditional sense. I, as a fan, am rooting for Mark Henry, but he is the heel. And Sheamus is supposed to be the babyface, but I find Sheamus to be a villain, a bully. It's not working for me. I hope that Mark Henry beats the crap out of him at the pay-per-view. And I don't think as a viewer that's what I'm supposed to be thinking about right now.
But I bet you're not the only viewer who is thinking that as well. So, you know, I think probably the best built-up thing on this, on the whole show is probably, you know, Orton and Big Show. You know, again, it's not the best, you know, but at least it's probably been one of the better things they've had to build up.
I guess they've been beating each other up. That sounds simplistic.
Well, yeah, I mean,
sometimes simple is good.
Well, one trying to get over on the other one, and you know, again, that at least has made the most sense out of any of these other ones.
Yeah. So the main event is supposed to be, well, actually, the main event's probably John Cena and Ryback. Although if they have a screwy finish, it's possible that they'll put Brock and Triple H last, or maybe the Ziggler match will go on last if Alberto Del Rio is going to. Actually, I don't know how he's going to end up champion, because at this point, it's looking like Dolph Ziggler is not going to be competing on the pay-per-view. But it's possible he may. I guess we have to wait and see. In fact, I know we have to wait and see. When we come back from the break, we're going to tell you about his concussion. He suffered a concussion, very serious concussion. All of that after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next hour and a half talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 94, 794, 208 on XM Radio, streaming worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can also check us out on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. Search Wrestling Observer or Sports Byline. You can hear all the great Sports Byline programming, including this fabulous show. And if you can't get enough, if you only get to hear one show per week, you are missing out. WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go to get as many as 4 shows in a single day. Not even a week, a day. I do at least 2 shows a day, Monday through Friday. Usually there's a morning show and an evening show. Often there is also an afternoon show, a 10-minute afternoon update. I do shows with Dave Meltzer. I do shows with Vinny. I do shows with guests. We got Jake the Snake Roberts on the show this coming Tuesday. It's going to be a really fun time. We had DDP 2 weeks ago. We have guests on all the time. And all of this is available for only $10.99 per month. That is our subscription price. For the $10.99, you not only get all of the brand new shows, which you can podcast to your smartphone, listen to it on the road, on the way to work, at the gym, wherever you listen to your audio, you can podcast it, but you get every single show we've ever done in our archives. Every show that we have done dating back to 2005 is available in the archives right now. Thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of audio available for you to download at the touch of a finger. So head over to WrestlingObserver.com. If you scroll down the right-hand side of the page, a listing of our latest free radio shows. You can download them. You can go up there today and get 1, 2, 3, 4 brand new shows absolutely free. Download them, check them out, and if you like what you hear, thousands of them, thousands and thousands, are waiting for you in the archives for only $10.99 a month. If you sign up, I guarantee that if you like this show, you will love your subscription. Guaranteed. Absolutely guaranteed. So, back to the show here. Dolph Ziggler suffered a concussion, everybody. This was on SmackDown. Mike, you actually have watched SmackDown already. Was it apparent when he suffered the concussion?
Well, I didn't see that, unfortunately. That must have been in the first hour. I only saw that. I had a chance to see the second hour, but I will say this, judging from what I saw of Jack Swagger on Raw, throwing that ladder around, smashing Ricardo into the rail, which wasn't too bad, but him with Dolph Ziggler and Alberto on Monday night, I can only imagine, and I'm a Swagger fan. I'm actually a fan of all three of these guys, and I think they've deserved better in this feud and in the build-up to this feud, but Swagger, who's already notorious for being a little bit stiff and a touch sloppy, I guess, at times, didn't do much for his rep here if he did actually KO Ziggler, because I'm sure this whole match was going to be built around Dolph Ziggler being the Super Bowl that he is, and taking that element out of it,
not a fan.
Again, now you're having and if it's just going to be a one-on-one Swagger Del Rio match, again, you have this stipulation of the ladder match, then why? I mean, what are you going to make it a capture the flag match then, or
sure,
something like that? I guess you could. I guess you probably should. If that's
not a bad idea, actually.
You know, again, they should really have been building up, and maybe they still are building up to SummerSlam, of doing some sort of loser leaves town or something like that that'll give the thing a little bit more impact. And I don't know. I don't – Swagger and Del Rio just on its own – again, with how it's been built up, I don't really want to see it. Again, I think all three of these guys have deserved better in the build-up to this feud. But, again, hopefully Ziggler's actually not as bad off as could possibly be, and he's still in the match, which, you know, at least, again, he brightens it up a lot.
Yeah, what happened was on Monday, they all battled with ladders, and Swagger got a hold of the ladder, and I thought, oh, my God. He is going to kill somebody in this ladder match. He nearly killed Ricardo. He nearly killed Ziggler. He nearly killed Alberto. He just looked like he was killing these guys with this ladder. And Jack Swagger has a reputation of being very, very stiff. He hits guys really hard. He potatoes them in the ring. I mean, some guys like it, some guys hate it. But on SmackDown, I guess there was a spot, and Ziggler went to grab a ladder, and Ziggler got punted right in the head by Jack Swagger. Just Swagger punted him right in the head. And apparently, when he was told later what happened, Dolph's first words were some of the effect of typical Swagger. So this is not the first time, I guess, that Jack Swagger has punted poor Dolph Ziggler. But Ziggler suffered such a serious concussion that he had retrograde amnesia, which means this happened on Tuesday, and his first memory was going to the airport on Wednesday. He had no memory at all of Monday. He had no memory of Raw. He had no memory of Tuesday. He had no memory of SmackDown. That is a serious concussion. You know that he had concussions before, but nothing like this. And so he's got to, he's just going to be waiting. Just a waiting game. And at that point, he'll, I guess, find out if he can work the pay-per-view. My guess is he will not be able to. He's got to pass the impact testing. And if he does, he'll work the pay-per-view. And if he doesn't, he won't. And I guess we shall wait and see. But I would guess it doesn't look good.
Doesn't probably look good for Jack Swagger either. I'm not saying time's probably ticking on, but it's definitely ticking on him being in, being considered a main event type of guy. I mean, obviously everything didn't quite work out after winning Money in the Bank and winning the title after that. It wasn't a good reign, but not a whole lot of guys have had good reigns. But after getting busted, driving with weed and speeding and that situation and, I don't think this thing has gotten over to the way they thought it would. In fact, I definitely know it hasn't gotten over to the way they thought it would. Again, even though he's a great physical presence, and even though he's a great amateur wrestler, you keep doing this to guys, and you do it to a guy like Ziggler, who they depend on greatly. If nothing else, you could always throw Dolph Ziggler out there to have a good match with someone, or again, bounce around for someone and make it entertaining and get reactions from people, which Jack Swagger doesn't do. So probably not the best move or the best time right now for Swagger.
Got to be careful with people. You got to take care of your partner's probably the bad word. Your opponent, your fellow workers. You can't get the reputation of a guy that's hurting guys. And you know, I didn't know when I heard about the concussion. I at the time did not know what happened. But if you listen to Tuesday's show with Dave and I mean, our immediate assumption was it's probably Swagger's fault. And you don't want people to be assuming that it's your fault when something happens because you're I don't know. It's just it's bad to get that reputation. It's very much. Go ahead.
Let me ask you a question as, you know, somebody who's actually a pro wrestler. Going in and wrestling a guy like that, knowing you have to face a guy like that who is notoriously stiff or traditionally stiff or sloppy or both, how do you try to go in there? I mean, obviously you can work around it only so much, but how do you deal with a guy like that or someone with a reputation like that?
With my hands up. I'm not kidding.
But do you retaliate back in, like, the Japanese method of being stiff back and forth and you got to, like, establish, you know, that type of thing? Or do you just try to get through it the best way you can and just, you know, curse your name afterwards?
I never got in the ring with somebody that was really, well, like, I guess, or actually, you know what? That's not true at all. I have been in with people that I remember I got one. Actually, a couple of times. It was usually like an enziguri was what always got me. But I would never retaliate. I would try to always work as light as humanly possible. And my hope is always. I'll just give you an example. This is not pro wrestling, but it's from my experience. Maybe this is just me, but my experience in jiu-jitsu. I've been to tournaments and I see two guys grappling. And they're going a million miles an hour, and it looks like, oh my God, this. When I get in there with one of these guys, this dude is just gonna, you know, overwhelm me. But usually, I've found that like when you're grappling somebody, You know, you can set the pace. They're going to, usually the person is going to go at the speed that you're going to go. And maybe sometimes, especially if you're more experienced than the other guy, if you're both at the same experience level, they may set a pace that you've got to keep up with. Or if they're more advanced, they'll set a pace you got to keep up with. But if I'm grappling somebody that's less experienced than me, even if they go really fast with everybody else, I can set the pace when I'm the more experienced grappler. And I would always try to do the exact same thing in pro wrestling. I would try to set the pace. I would try to go really light and hope that they would respond in kind. And if I knew it was a guy that, you know, there are a lot of guys that they just, Jack Swagger, I'll bet, is one of these guys. I don't think he goes in there trying to beat people up. I think he's like the old, the big puppy. You know, he doesn't know his own strength.
A puppy with big paws.
He's a little clumsy. He doesn't know his own strength. And he doesn't try to hurt people. But he gets in there and he hurts people. And if I were in the ring with someone like that, it's like, if I know this guy's going to kick me, I have my hands up. I don't care how fake it looks. I don't care how far my hands are away from my face to protect my face. I'm going to have my hands up at all times and try to protect myself. And Ziggler, to me, comes off as a guy that, you know, he's going to hope the guy doesn't kick him too hard, but he's going to give him his face, and he's going to give him his body, and he's going to take a crazy bump, and he's going to get hit real hard. And, you know, I'm not even saying that, like, I'm certainly not saying that I was a better worker than Dolph Ziggler, but Dolph Ziggler has a way of working and a style where this is not his first concussion. He's had many concussions, and granted, I haven't had thousands of matches, but I had at least 400 or 500 minimum, and I never got a concussion. And it wasn't because I did like a ridiculously safe honky tonk man in 2013 style, but I tried to take care of myself and I tried to protect myself at all times. And I didn't put my face out there if I knew I was in the ring with a guy who was going to wind up and throw a hard kick. That's my thoughts.
Understandable. All right.
Very passionate about this. You got to take care of yourself and everybody else.
The amazing part about this feud, too, is all three of these guys are actually legitimately tough guys and good amateur wrestlers. And yeah, you know, obviously they'll never do a pure sporting thing or anything like that. But you know, Triple H has tried to do things like interviews after. You know, apparently, I guess I should give him credit for this. I'm guessing giving him credit for some of the things he tries to do to make it more of a sport. And the fact he is such an MMA fan, probably more of a boxing fan than anything, mimicking some things like that. With three guys that have the ability that they do, I'm not saying they should have amateur wrestling matches or anything like that, but being able to drop a little bit of the corniness of the storyline and how they force-fed it into this, you know, it would be nice if they just kind of focused on the fact that these are three guys who can legitimately kick each other's ass, and they should kind of focus on that. Although Jack Swagger, again, please don't actually kick anyone in the ass.
They have been focusing on that a little too much, apparently.
But at least Swagger has, and man, Dutch Mantel's got a hell of a limp.
Well, yeah, he does. He's been...
They seem like they really want him to wrestle, too.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, he was great.
Yes, he was, but he hurts my feelings when he walks down to ringside. Just have him talk.
I know, but he's got to walk down to ringside whether he works or not, and it's not like he's doing a lot in the ring.
I do like that little scooter thing they have, too. That does make me laugh. I'll give him credit for points for that.
All right, everybody, we'll be back in just a moment. You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for our final quick segment of the first hour, and then we shall be back with another full hour after our top-of-the-hour seven-minute break. As noted, we have five matches so far for Extreme Rules. That pay-per-view is taking place this coming Sunday, next week, 7 days from now, May 19th. The debut of Kane's movie many years ago from the Scott Trade Center, St. Louis, Missouri. And we got other matches that are likely to be added, including probably the AJ versus Caitlyn women's title match, which I would not be surprised one bit if AJ ended up winning the title there. And what else do we have, Mike, that is likely? Shield versus Daniel Bryan and Kane for the tag team titles?
It looks at very possibly that way. I mean, could we get Dean Ambrose? And I guess not Dean Ambrose. We'll get Cesaro and Kofi, maybe, possibly, I guess, for the, the U.S. title.
Yeah, they did. They had an awesome Cesaro versus Kofi match on main event a couple of weeks ago. And then when it was over, they did an angle where Cesaro pulled out one of Kofi's braids. So I presume that this feud must continue. And main event, by the way, also had a great match this past Wednesday with Randy Orton and Antonio Cesaro. So Antonio Cesaro has become the king of main event 2 weeks in a row. And we'll see who he ends up facing.
How you know also that he's going to be in that match with Kofi Kingston, or at least a really good chance of it, is because he goes out there, has a really great match against Randy Orton, but loses, so I think he's right back to the U.S. title ranks.
That's right. When you lose a match to a star, that makes you the number one contender to the jobber belt.
He and Wade Barrett, they certainly deserve better as well.
At least Cesaro's getting long matches on main event. Barrett's losing quickly in prelims on Raw.
That's true, and then, at least dropping the yodeling thing with Cesaro, too, which they obviously recognized was a mistake, and having him as some sort of, I don't know, if he's going to be some sort of little Swiss Army man now who goes and, you know, wears his sunglasses and his beret and collects stuff from his war days, I guess maybe he could be like that.
Back in a moment, Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every Sunday by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare up at WrestlingObserver.com. We're here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can sometimes check us out on Channel 92, Sirius Satellite Radio as well, and also on the TuneIn Radio app by searching Wrestling Observer or Sports Byline. We've been talking a lot about WWE Extreme Rules pay-per-view, which is coming up next Sunday from St. Louis. And Mike, since we got a quick segment here, take us through any other notes from SmackDown this Friday night.
We'll see, then we really need a better second hour here after that first hour, which I really am blaming on the whole build to this upcoming pay-per-view. But one of the things I actually really like about coming up about the pay-per-view, one of the feuds I like, is Caitlin and AJ. Just because of the way they talk to each other and throw digs on each other backstage, and that was my high point of SmackDown, is those two were going back and forth at each other. Caitlin telling AJ she's got the body of a 10-year-old boy and soulless eyes, and AJ calling her man arms and getting her digs on her that way. But in walks Natalya and then the great Kali, and they try to solve the mystery of who is Caitlin's secret admirer. And there is Kali wearing a Rey Mysterio mask and actually is unsure of whether Natalya really knows or not that Kali is not the Rey Mysterio. He's actually the great Kali. They have some more banter back and forth, and then they go back to Kali again, who's got a Cody Rhodes mustache on. And I think that and Ryback destroying Jericho at the very end of the show, that's pretty much what you missed from SmackDown.
I cannot wait to see the great Kali as Rey Mysterio. I've seen a picture on the internet, but I have not seen this in action. I'm going to probably be watching SmackDown right after this show. But great Kali has been a hidden rare gem on this show. Actually, not really hidden at all, but he is very rare.
That's the whole thing about him being undercover, hard to hide.
That's right. We're going to be back in just a moment, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. It is a sunny day, or it was a sunny day here in Seattle. Now it's actually starting to get not sunny. How's the weather over there, Mike?
It is pouring rain here, thunderstorms, and we had one day of nice weather where it was almost 85 degrees, actually, sunny and no wind, and it made it feel like summer at the beach, and then it was all taken away, and there were thunderstorms, and now it got a little bit colder again, so not as warm as where you are, actually.
It was in the 80s. The 80s today, 82 degrees. And unfortunately, tomorrow it is going to be 60. That's how the weather changes around here. From 80 to 60 in 24 hours. And raining. Sucks. Oh well, what can you do?
I wonder why you guys are always angry up there in the Pacific Northwest.
Tell me about it. And then I got to watch Impact. Actually, Impact has been a pretty decent show of late. You wouldn't know from looking at the ratings. The ratings got really bad. They dropped down to as low as 1.1 million viewers. Not this past Thursday, but the Thursday prior. That was the lowest number all year long. And this led to the decision to move Impact from an 8 o'clock p.m. start time to a 9 o'clock p.m. start time, starting at the end of this month. And one of the reasons put forth for the low rating was daylight savings time. And if you've been following wrestling for any length of time, you have heard every excuse in the book. It's raining outside. It's sunny outside. It is cloudy outside. The weather's too hot. The weather's too cold. Always an excuse for a bad rating. Paul Bosch used to say that he was going to give every excuse in the book, but the reason that attendance was bad was because he booked a show that nobody wanted to see. However, as goofy as it might sound, that the rating is down due to daylight savings time, over the past couple of days, as people were arguing this topic, how stupid that sounded, several articles were produced from individuals in the television industry that stated that there is a phenomena every year at the same time where television shows see their ratings drop by anywhere from 15 to 20% the week of daylight savings time. Because the day gets an hour longer, the sun is an hour brighter, and people stay outside a little bit longer, and it does, in fact, affect the ratings. And the Impact number has been down about 15 to 20% ever since daylight savings time started. And so, as wacky as that sounds, it does appear that the reason that Impact ratings fell, NBA playoffs, I'm sure, don't help. But the main reason that ratings have been down is because of daylight savings time and the show starting at 8 p.m.
Yeah, you know, I can see that a little bit because it has affected other shows as well. So it does make some sense psychologically, you know, the way it, you know, that plays on you. It's just some sort of, I don't know, just you're thinking it's summer or whatever the reason is, you know, getting whatever happens to that hour of sleep, however it affects you, whatever it is. Obviously, there's a little bit of an effect. Now, even with that said, the NBA playoffs, I think, do play havoc with, you know, Impact's number there a little bit. But they also, is it that big of a deal where they have such a drop? I mean, it's true that that's the case. But with that said, it's not like their second hour is knocking down, you know, is slaying or anything like that. It's not like their overrun is, you know, which they don't have, but it's not like that last segment is doing, you know, incredibly fantastic or anything like that. And its bottom line with TNA is it really doesn't matter. They've had these variations when it comes to viewership. They always still hover around, you know, 1 million, 1 million 1, 1 million 2, whatever it is. They're always around that number anyway. It's just their issue is getting those people to turn around and spend their money on the pay-per-view, which has always been their problem. And I don't think it really matters as far as the TV ratings when it comes to the TNA either. You know, they're just a piece of the puzzle on Spike, which obviously now they're moving around again, and that's probably got more to do with Bellator than anything, but they're moving it back to 9 o'clock. That's fine. Still, is there anything that's been happening on TNA TV that makes you want to go spend, you know, the money on the pay-per-view with Sting and Bully Ray coming up in June?
So I guess the first question before we get into the actual storylines of TNA is that with the show moving to 9 o'clock p.m. from 8 o'clock p.m., that would require Bellator to start at 11 o'clock p.m. And if they're running a show, for example, on the West Coast, they're asking people to show up at 11 p.m. for this television taping. And it's looking like with the switch that most likely Bellator is going to be moving to a different day. Now, Bellator moving to a different day is conceivably problematic since their ratings, I don't want to say lived and died, but if Impact did a great number, then Bellator ended up doing a good number. And if Impact did a poor number, then Bellator usually ended up doing a poor number as well. There was a very big crossover between Impact viewers and the viewers of Bellator. So, yes, moving Impact later is probably going to help the rating slightly. I don't know how much, but slightly. But moving Bellator to a completely different day, that could be bad news for Bellator.
Yeah, it really could be. And I don't know what the plan is for the Ultimate Fighter. What day is that going to be on in the fall?
Oh, their version of Ultimate Fighter? Wednesday.
Okay, so I don't know. I guess you could bundle it all together on Wednesdays, and that, to me, that wouldn't be all that bad of an idea. I mean, you don't, yeah, sure, there's no Impact lead-in or anything like that, but making an entire night centering around Bellator, I don't think would be all that bad of an idea for Spike.
I'm going to read this very quickly. This is from TulsaWorld.com. Despite a busy week with the election of a new pope, the ABC, CBS, and NBC evening newscasts collectively had 11% fewer viewers than a week before, and a glance outside the window reveals the primary reason why. The simple act of moving the clock ahead 1 hour for daylight savings time is costly for the broadcast because the hour that turns from darkness to light appears to be the hour in which they are shown in most of the country. It is not just a one-week phenomena. The newscast will have to deal with smaller audiences until the clocks are pushed back in the fall. News consultant Andrew Tindall says, what it shows is that a large proportion of the people that watch the news are not watching because they watch the news. They're watching it because they happen to be home when the news is on. And this is just talking about the news, obviously. So it says it's part of a predictable cycle every year. We know to expect a slight dip in viewership when people are enjoying longer hours of daylight. So there you go. For people that think that this is preposterous, this is one of three articles alone that I read this week about daylight savings time affecting TV ratings.
Well, it's just another piece in the puzzle, too, of summertime viewing. I mean, we can just basically start that a little bit sooner and attach it now to daylight savings time because it's proven and it's borne itself out that people's viewing patterns change in the summertime because they're doing more things outside and priorities change and things like that. And lead-ins are different. And in sports, there's really only baseball during that time. So how you program and sell things differently, you know, it's just, again, summertime viewing is different. And now, basically, I the way I look at it, the way this is kind of sounding, you can now attach a very beginning of that now to daylight savings time every year.
I should note that this person here in one of the comments sections notes that they used to program an independent station back in Los Angeles. And she says that we love November through February ratings periods. May and especially July, not so much. And also, this is very important, noted that more daylight used to really take a toll on fringe programs. And Impact Wrestling, I realize the viewership is very good per a show on Spike, but pro wrestling is a fringe program, especially Impact. And a show that is doing, like, you know, a very popular hit show on a network may not see as big a hit as a less popular fringe show like an Impact. And the second hour Impact has not had any problems. This is the first hour that has been hurt since daylight savings time started. So anyway, we're going to do a break. We'll talk more about Impact and the upcoming pay-per-view here in just a moment. You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio, Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can also check us out. Tune in radio app on your smartphone. We're talking TNA Impact moving to 9 o'clock at the end of May, new start time. They moved earlier. Now they're moving back. We'll see what they end up doing with the Bellator programming. But probably not good news for Bellator if they are moved to a different day. And even if they're not moved to a different day, that's very, very late in the evening when Bellator will be starting. But they do have a pay-per-view coming up. It is Sting versus Bully Ray. Sting! Somebody tweeted me, at Brian Alvarez, by the way, everybody. Somebody tweeted me that they were listening to a show that I did, I believe, in 2006. And I was talking to my grandmother, which, yes, I do on certain shows. And I explained to her that this was probably the last year Sting was going to be wrestling. This was in 2006. It is now 2013, and he is headlining a pay-per-view with Bully Ray. Not sure about this idea.
Yeah, I'm not sure about it either, other than the fact that Bully Ray is incredibly entertaining. He is holding up more than his end of the bargain, and Sting in a what for all intents and purposes could be a sprint that includes lots of plunder, includes some sort of interference from Devon on Bubba's side, from Hogan or God knows Abyss, God knows who else on Sting's side. I'm not that worried about it, but yeah, when you look at it on paper and you're just looking in 2013 and it's Bully Ray and Sting for the TNA title. Again, Bully Ray, nothing wrong with him, the way he's been able to reestablish himself in TNA, and just his whole deal and the way he comes across is great. He's been fantastic and very entertaining, but yeah, facing off against Sting, again, doing this in 2013 is mind-boggling, especially when you have cut it back to only having four pay-per-views, and again, it's one of the reasons that it just doesn't seem like they're really knocking them dead right now.
See, Slammiversary is June 2nd, so we got about a month, and it's out of Boston, and the only match we have thus far is, in fact, Bully Ray versus Sting. They have taped another set of television tapings. By the way, on Impact this Thursday, James Storm was hurt while delivering a two count. Not making this up. He may have torn his groin.
You know, if this was Kevin Nash, he'd never hear the end of it.
No, but at least he was doing like a, he was sliding in a home base and doing a count at the same time, and he's not really like a referee. So I can understand it. It sucks. He needs an MRI, I believe, next week to determine the full extent of this. But that's a very, very painful injury. May have torn an ab. No good.
Hernia.
All from being a referee. Yeah, hernia. Yeah, sucks. Anyway, did you see that, by the way? Did you notice it when it happened?
No, but I mean, immediately afterwards, though, you could see it written all over his face. And the first super kick looked, again, maybe he just didn't... Yeah. Maybe he was overselling. He wasn't overselling. His face during the first one was awful. He hit the second one and didn't look as in pain as the first one. But yeah, after that, especially after the first one, I'm amazed he was able to do that considering his condition.
Tough guy. They announced at the second set of tapings that the Bound for Glory series is returning. So they do it every year, a tournament. I guess kind of a round robin. I'm not entirely sure. It was better last year, that's for sure, than it was when Vince Russo was booking it, and it was just a complete disaster. But the winner of the Bound for Glory series is going to get a championship match at, yes, Bound for Glory. And Bully Ray is a champion. If you had to take your guess, who would win this tournament?
Oh.
Let me throw a monkey wrench into your booking before you even start.
Okay.
They want to do Bully Ray and Hulk Hogan for the title.
Of course they do.
So how do you do the Bound for Glory series, keep the title on Bully Ray, but somehow give the championship match to Hulk Hogan? Does Matt Morgan win and then hand it off to Hulk? That would kill
either Matt Morgan or Abyss.
That would kill the Bound for Glory tournament and kill... It would just kill everything.
And this would, again, this would prevent them from doing it. Why, then? I mean, really. It could either be that or Abyss, where they represent Hulk Hogan. And I know they want to do, again, I will believe Hulk Hogan wrestles again when I see it. considering the condition that his body is in and any second thoughts that creep in. So he's going to have some sort of, you know, extension of himself out there doing it, and those would be the two I would think of now that Abyss is back. And you, again, Abyss and Bully Ray wouldn't hurt my feelings. It's just I don't think you'd have Abyss go through the whole Bound for Glory tournament. You could. It's not like he couldn't do it, but it would make more sense for somebody like a Matt Morgan to do it. Again, at least to them, it would make more sense to have Matt Morgan do it and be linked in with Hogan and to do it that way.
I think, let me think about this. I guess Matt Morgan or Abyss, either one would work. I just think it's such a, I don't know if the idea is to do this or not, but I just think that's...
AJ Styles taking back TNA by going through and eliminating people, and then finally at the end, when he's still all dark and brooding, he takes out Bully Ray, and he wins the title, and then he's bright and he's happy again, and he's back home in the Impact Zone.
I can see that happening. But if
that
they want to
way
do
out of this, because I don't know if dark and brooding AJ is going to be believable for all that much longer.
If they want to do Hogan versus Bully for the title, I mean, I'm afraid you got to do it at Bound for Glory if you're going to do it on pay-per-view, because you can't wait until January. You got to do this as soon as humanly possible. As soon as he can walk, I mean, you got to do the match, right? I mean, you don't want to hold this off until next January when he's even older. And I just think the idea of it'd be one thing if, like, you know, Bound for Glory's coming, and you do a match to determine who's going to get the shot at Bully Ray, and a guy wins the shot a month before, and then somehow something happens, and Hogan ends up getting the shot or whatever. Still wouldn't be a good idea, but it's still better than, like, devoting 3 months of TV to determining a number one contender, and then at the end of the day, that guy just gives the title shot to Hulk Hogan. I think that'd be such a terrible idea, but... I don't know how else you do Hulk Hogan and Bully Ray for the title without Hogan having to win the tournament, which absolutely is not going to happen.
I was really fine with old dad Hulk Hogan and getting yelled at by Bully Ray. Why they feel as though they need to, or why any whoever it is that is coming up with this, why they feel that they have to have Hulk Hogan doing a match with Bully Ray for the title is just... It really is absolutely beyond me. I mean, why they just don't do a street fight for his daughter's honor where the old man Clint Eastwood style, you know, fist fights the abusive ex-husband or whatever it would, you know, whatever you want to throw on top of it. That would make more sense than what they're going for with Hulk Hogan actually having a match, which I just, again, for as much pain as he always seems to be in and the way he shuffles about and the fact that he gets a surgery, like you said, after each one of his matches, why would you even consider doing this?
Because he wants to win the title at 60?
I guess Jerry Lawler still technically goes out and wins champions at high school fairs and, you know, places like that. So I guess why not Hulk Hogan do? That to me seems to be a awful, awful reason to do this if you're Hulk Hogan. I mean, I don't know. Does he really wants to win a title at 60?
Yeah.
You know what? I guess, hey, that's professional wrestling right there. Ric Flair would be happy if he dies in the ring. He will be happy to win a title at 100 years old. And to, yeah, he would do that. Mae Young, obviously, still loves doing things. She still probably thinks that she can kick ass and go. She still might actually even be able to a little bit. You can never really let it go. I just, again, the way Hogan is shuffling about now and the fact that, like we were talking about with Bully Ray and Sting, it's 2013 and Hulk Hogan is going to go out there and wrestle for the World Heavyweight title. I know it's TNA. I know he's an enduring cartoon character that, for the most part, the TNA fan base, I mean, it's not like the world's going to end if he wrestles in another match, and it is Hulk Hogan and all that stuff. But really, it's, I don't think, it just doesn't need to be done to me, but I guess we'll see. Big pay-per-view draw, I'm sure this is going to be.
Yeah, I'm trying to find out the oldest person to ever win a world title. How old was Vince when he won the title?
Oh, yeah, 50.
He was in his 50s.
Luthez wrestled his last match at like 70 against Chono, didn't he?
Yeah, but it wasn't a he didn't win a title. I'm gonna try and I should know this off the top of my head. I'm sure there's something obscure somewhere that I'm unaware of. But as far as like an active world heavyweight champion, 60 winning the TNA title might set some sort of record. Although I really don't think it's the same as winning like the WWE title. Obviously, got a list of the oldest active professional wrestlers here. I do have that. Abe Coleman was the oldest wrestler who ever lived, verified. Lived to be 101 years old. And in second place is Angelo Savaldi, who is still alive, 99 years old, Mike.
That is an amazing man.
That's right. Last surviving veteran of the Pioneer era.
That is absolutely, that really is amazing. You know, Frank A. Gotch, if he was still alive, and, you know, he may actually be, I bet you at 140 years old, nearly 140 years old, he could still win a title.
That's right. He's actually...
Actually, you know what? He would have went into MMA, too.
That's true. Mae Young is in second place. She's only 90. So he's got her beat by almost a decade. Think about that. Contemplate that, everybody. We'll be back in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final long segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, 794 as well, sometimes Channel 92, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the Internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And we are here every Sunday, as noted. We're talking all sorts of things here today, including the oldest professional wrestlers of all time. Vince McMahon, 67 years old. I think he was, let's see when he won the title. I'm intrigued by these stats of these old fellas here, how old they were when they won a world title for the last time. Vince won the world title. Take a guess, Mike, when you think he won the world title.
Oh, I'll say 50, God, it was 90s, 52, 53.
52, 53. This would have been approximately the year 2000. So we're talking 13 years ago. So he was in his 50s. He was not yet 60 years old. How do I not know who the oldest wrestler to win a world heavyweight title is? It must be like Ric Flair, right?
That's what I was thinking. I mean, Dory Funk Jr. always just looked like the oldest one. I know he still will occasionally spot wrestle and do things now, and he's 72. God, Lawler, though, didn't win any major titles. He just has won the, he's got the total amount of titles won is through the roof, but I guess he's really not that old either.
There's a wrestler, Dave Kidney, who is 81 years old, who is still wrestling in Scotland at 81.
What do you think those matches are like?
Slow?
Do you think methodical would be a...
Methodical might be a...
I don't think you have to worry about any kibashi moonsaults in that one.
Probably not. Wrestling. Probably not. Man, I know the answer.
Vern Gagne? How old was Vern? Was he like late 40s?
I know when I get the answer to this, I'm just going to... I mean, it'll probably be like Mil Máscaras, who won some title when he was 68, but I don't know.
No, but Mil Máscaras never lost any titles to win again.
That is true.
He was just champion of whatever he was, the belt he held for, 78 straight years or whatever it is.
That's right. Why don't I'll keep investigating, and first off, tell everybody what the hell happened with Jay Briscoe this week.
Well, Jay Briscoe, the state of Delaware became, I believe it was the 11th state to pass the legality of same-sex marriage, and Jay Briscoe, who's the Ring of Honor heavyweight champion, decided to put out a tweet earlier on this week after the announcement, saying, if basically I'm paraphrasing here because I don't have it in front of me, Delaware has passed same-sex marriage. If that is good for you, then congratulations. He then, and I'm also paraphrasing here, sends out a second tweet that says, if you try to teach my kids that there's nothing wrong with that, I'm going to effing shoot you. Now, that was a little bit closer to almost exactly what he had said. And that tweet stayed up there all day. Later on that evening, finally, it was pulled off. And then later on, Jay Briscoe deleted his entire Twitter account and obviously upset a whole lot of people, him doing this and being the face of Ring of Honor. He was forced to come out with a statement. Ring of Honor came out with a statement distancing themselves, from Briscoe's comments and saying that Briscoe was going to have an announcement on Saturday night when he wrestled outside of Pittsburgh. Briscoe, earlier on the week, also after this had happened, decided to, you know, obviously delete his Twitter account and then say he was going to donate money to a anti-bullying charity. And have this announcement on Saturday where he basically was apologetic, saying that he was the face of the company and his real name is Jay Pugh, and he was caught up in the character. But he also said he was just trying to protect his kids and his family from this crazy world we live in. And basically said also at the end, in my house we preach to love your neighbor and yourself, and it was an apology. It certainly was, and him donating to charity is obviously, it's never a bad thing if you're going to try to help out a charity. But it's again, there's a lot of people who believe, as Jay Briscoe does, especially in the area that he lives in. I'm familiar with the area that he lives in, and they're not alone in those thoughts. But Ring of Honor, being owned by Sinclair Broadcasting, and again, him giving this apology in his where he feels the safest in a wrestling ring and throwing some money at it, it's just, I know people think it's being overly politically correct or anything like that, but I just think in 2013, obviously with the way we've gone with same-sex marriage, and nobody's forcing your kids, and that's been the biggest thing with me with this whole thing with Jay Briscoe of, you know, you're the one who made it a issue to say that I don't want this, to teach my kids this. Nobody was talking about teaching your kids it, Jay. It was just talking about there was same-sex marriage was passed. You're the one who had the quote and had to put it out there that you don't want this, you know, for your kids. And obviously that there's, you know, fear and there's, again, this isn't the time or place to have a political debate on same-sex marriage. But with that said, you know, his tweet probably should have been come down hard on, you know, even harder than this by Sinclair Broadcasting, just because it's, again, it's bad PR and it's just really an ignorant thing to do. And it's, you know, should be a reminder to everyone. You can have your own opinion, but when you're working for someone and you're working for a company, you're supposed to be a representative of that company. You have to use your head and to think and keep your personal beliefs, you know, sometimes out of the picture when they don't need to be said.
Yeah, Twitter. Sometimes you just got to stay off the Twitter. And he deleted his Twitter. And probably for the best, quite frankly. But yes, he did apologize. The video is up actually on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com if it has not been pulled off YouTube. But you can head up there and see the apology. And
Brian, I got one for you.
Yes.
He lives actually very close. He lives like 45 minutes away from one of the gay-friendliest places on the East Coast, in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. You know, if this is one thing, too, with Sinclair, if you really want to do something, and I think we're going to start seeing this in the NFL because some things happened during, you know, the NFL has been the poster child for being the last nut that's going to be able to be cracked as far as seeing gay athletes come out in the sports. You know, if Sinclair really wanted to make a statement and to do something and to, you know, get this across, because obviously Ring of Honor and, you know, came out and said that they distanced themselves from it. We're not about this. We're about welcoming everyone. If they really wanted to do something, and drive the point home, they would actually have him do something, you know, like that with the gay community. I think that would be more effective than him giving a speech in the ring, kind of, again, in his protection zone and just throwing money at a charity. Again, he doesn't have to do that. I don't, you know, blame him for not volunteering to do something like that. But with that said, if he really wanted to make an impact on somebody and send a message, that may be the way to do it, because obviously there's probably some fears there. So he can actually go and face those.
Yeah, we'll see if there's further fallout. I mean, we've had apologies. We've had apologies from Ring of Honor, several of them, actually. And I presume that now that he's made his public apology, they're going to try and move on with everything. But we'll see what happens. It was a very unfortunate situation. And yeah, unfortunately, I don't think something like this, I don't think it will be the last. Not saying, you know, Jay Briscoe in particular, but someone's going to screw up on Twitter again, probably, maybe even this week, for all I know.
It's in a big bat sign out there for Kurt Angle. His Twitter hasn't been hacked in a while. He's due.
That's right. You know that Tenryu, 52 years old.
Genichiro Tenryu?
Yeah.
He's only 52?
No, he won the Triple Crown when he was 52.
Oh, okay. That's really believable. He may be the oldest one. That may actually, you know, outside of Vince McMahon, if you're talking about full-time wrestler, the King of Lumps, Genichiro Tenryu. Yeah.
The oldest person.
He's still entertaining. I don't know how old he is now, but I'm sure he could still be entertaining.
Okay, let me think about this. So of the major U.S. championships, see if we can think about this. The oldest WWE champion for sure was Vince McMahon. And I have figured out he was 54 years old when he won the WWE title. So that's WWE. He would have been 54. Was anyone older than the age of 54? Did they win the WCW title? Flair is, what is he now, 62?
Yeah, I would figure Flair would have to be the oldest one. Even the gimmick champions, I mean, no. I mean, all the guys at the end who held it, Sid Vicious was older, but obviously wasn't as old as Flair. Hogan, again, Hogan's younger than Flair, so it probably is Ric Flair.
Ric Flair is 64, and he absolutely did not win the title within the last 4 years, so it wouldn't, 64. So a decade ago was 2003. He has not won a title since WCW folded, correct?
Now he's got to be the oldest Intercontinental Champion, right, when he won that?
Yeah. But world champion, he definitely wouldn't have been older than 60. Do we count ECW? I don't think anybody in ECW was, I mean, maybe Terry Funk, but I don't even know how old he was at the time. How old was he at the time?
Well, he had to have only been, maybe he was late 40s.
Let's see, Terry Funk is 68 now, so it was definitely more than 8 years ago, so he was over 60. What about New Japan? Nobody has even been close to 60.
No.
All Japan, Triple Crown. I guess we had 52, but I don't think anyone's been older than 52. Same thing with Noah. I can't think of anybody that would have been older than 52 in Noah. So,
nope.
So are the top three Vince McMahon, Tenryu, and Ric Flair? Are those our three oldest world heavyweight champions that we can think of?
I think it would have to be, because you think of the older guys, too. Vern Gagne, I think, was probably only in his 40s, and Bockwinkle looked older, but again, same way. I think most of those guys probably peaked out, you know, in their 40s. The Terry Funk, Dory Funk, God. Even guys who got into wrestling late after football, it just, no, that's probably it. I mean, it's possible maybe Dick Byer, the Destroyer, may have won something, but even then, I think he was semi-retired, or at least, you know, I think more than enough as far as wrestling goes or being competitive for belts.
Luthez was 46 when he won his last world title, so he's out. Who do we say, Dick Byer? Here's some history for everybody here today. We're finding out the oldest world champions, if Hulk Hogan could break all records, which is looking like, I think his idea is not only would he break the record, but he would break it by like 6 years and nobody would ever break his record as oldest champion. Maybe that's his...
Dare Vince.
Yeah, maybe that's his deal, that Flair may end up with more world titles, but I won the world title at the oldest age of anybody. Let's see here. When did he last win the title? Dick Byer is 82 now. There's no way he's won a title in the last 22 years. That would be...
unless he beat Noel Mascaris for one.
That's right. Minus 22. He would have had to have won a title since 1991. And
Abdullah, Tiger Jeet Singh, any of those guys that would have won something in Japan, but I don't think so.
All right, everybody, we're going to head to the break. When we come back, we'll wrap the show up. So stick around. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here on WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We spent almost the last 20 minutes trying to figure out if there was any man in the world who had won a world heavyweight title after the age of 60, and then 54, and then finally 52. And it looks like Vince McMahon may at this point be the man who holds the record for the oldest world heavyweight champion, at least major world heavyweight title that anybody actually cares about. And Hulk Hogan is now gunning to maybe do that same thing at age 60 with the TNA world heavyweight title. Although he does run the risk, historians looking back and going, that doesn't count. It was the TNA title.
I think they probably shouldn't put that too much thought into it. I think more of more than that, at some point that's just poking the bear on Vince McMahon, though, and then either he or even Triple H. You know, Triple H, after all those years in the office, he needs to come back and teach some young whippersnapper a lesson, and Hogan does it at 60. Guaranteed somebody's going to do it one day at 61.
All right, if anybody can find any names, there's probably like some ridiculously obvious name that we're just completely overlooking. If anybody can think of a name that is older than 54 as a world heavyweight champion of a major promotion that anybody would care about, send it to me at brian@wrestlingobserver.com, and we'll do an update on the show. Maybe we'll ask Dave tonight as well and see what he can think. But you'd think that this would be like some sort of common knowledge thing. I mean, it is a record, the oldest man to hold a respected world heavyweight title. Who would that be? Maybe because it's Vince McMahon, that's why nobody cares. And probably it's a bigger deal to hold multiple versions of a title as opposed to only holding it one time. Actually, Vince held it once or twice. How many times did he hold the title?
I think he only held it once, but he also held the ECW title, didn't he?
That's right. He held the ECW title. He had the ECW and the WWE title. So actually, probably was even older when he held the ECW title, but that was the WWE version, so I don't think anybody counts that. But maybe he was 60, and that's Hogan's problem. All right, we're going to wrap it up. I want to thank everybody for listening, and we're going to be back later on tonight at WrestlingObserver.com. Thanks, Mike. Thanks to folks at Sports Byline. We'll talk to you again next week. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.